Motorcycles and Misfits at the Recycle Garage. This is the podcast. And today you have me, Liza, you have Douglas, Zoe,
hey,
and Megan.
Hey.
We're a little low energy today. We went to the races. Well, three of us went to the races.
I went and raced.
Zoe went and rode. We all rode. So Douglas, Megan, and I went to the FIM Superbike World Championship at Laguna Seca. It was fun. Who wants to give a review of the race?
They were going fast.
There were turns.
There were turns. They leaned.
Any crashes?
It was interesting. The second race was probably the most exciting. There was a lot of first and second place changes, which made it really interesting to watch. And a couple wrecks, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any injuries?
No. No, everybody got up and walked away.
And then the last race, there's this guy, the first place dude on who was riding for Kawasaki, he was in first place. And then the final lap, he went from first to fourth.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wait, in the last race?
Yeah.
So what, he just like lost all confidence?
Were we watching the same race?
Yeah, he went from first to fourth. He'd been in first like for a really long time.
Melandri?
Mm-mm. Then the Aprilia passed him. And then someone passed the Aprilia. And the
See, here's the
second.
Problem. We were all tired.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was the same. I thought the only change in the first four was fourth pass went to third.
No, the guy that had been in the first the
See,
whole time.
See, sadly,
day,
we know nobody's names.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he got booted down to fourth.
We were all in the last, falling asleep, like, so we may. Each of us may be right, is my point. I have no idea. Oh, but I wanted to say, so, and Zoe, you didn't hear the whole story. So when we go to these races, the first thing we do is, you know, first you have to seek shelter, then make fire.
Right. You got to make your home
right?
base, right?
So when we got there, and that's when Megan stumbled off like a zombie. She muttered coffee. And Douglas and I peeled off and went to seek out chairs and TVs. When we go to the MotoGP, we go to this Honda tent that has the big red couches, and we pitch camp there. That's but true. It wasn't set up. So we're like, rut-row, what do we do? So we went walking around looking at new bikes and all the bike dealer tents. And then at the end of the Kawasaki tent, there was tables and chairs and a TV set up, and it was gated with like a security person. And I was like, oh, I must be for like the riders or the racers. I don't know. We're just kind of
just on a whim. We're like, let's just go ask anyway.
Yeah, we'll just see. How do you get in here?
Right. So
they said, do you own a Kawasaki? I said,
yeah, this was they were promoting the Rock thing. Riders of Kawasaki. It's ROK. And they do like, it's $30 a year.
I want a rock.
And you get roadside assistance and special deals and Kawasaki and stuff like that. But they didn't make us sign up. I just showed them my key.
They didn't even ask us to prove it. I said, yes, I have a Kawasaki.
Yes.
And then just turned to him, do you have a Kawasaki? He goes, yes. And then we're like, oh, what about his girlfriend? Can we get a wristband for her? Wait, she has a Kawasaki.
She does. Yeah.
And she went, okay. So we go in, and it's like a bunch of tables and chairs set up under a tent. It's shady.
Free coffee, water, soda.
Free coolers of soda. And, like, nobody figured this out. In this space that would fit.
Yeah, it never really filled
25 people. Oh, no, probably.
Well,
there's like six, 20, about 25 people.
Mm-hmm.
There was maybe 10 or 12.
Mm-hmm.
So we pitched our camp and then went out and got food and stuff. And so we had this just really relaxed place to go.
Almost too relaxed. It felt like VIP.
If it had couches, then it would have been relaxed. I would have definitely fallen asleep.
So thank you to Kawasaki for that, because that made it really nice. And you could, like, we're sitting in our chairs, we're watching the race on the TV, but then you lean over and look past the TV and watch them go through the turn, lean back, watch them. They'd go around the corner and pass under the bridge, and I'd look over there and see them go past the bridge.
Sweet.
And these wristbands are so fashionable, too.
Yes. So we ended up having a really I think just an easy time, really comfortable.
And the parking was right there. We parked 50 yards from where we walked in and pretty much camped.
You can do paid parking, or you can just do the free motorcycle parking.
And it wasn't the sandy hill either. Mm-hmm. We came prepared this time. I crushed a can before
we were parked 100 yards right from where we were.
Yeah, it was camping. Right there. We just left all the gear on the bike. It was no problem.
Sweet.
And then the fun thing that Douglas and I did is they had the Yamaha had test rides that you could sign up for.
Sweet.
So we signed up for the test rides, and they had the FZ09s
and a couple.
They had
other.
A Roadstar. They had a FJ. Is that
FJ something?
Something. And the Bolt.
And the Bolt.
The Bolt. But most people were riding the FZ09s. Yeah. You could tell that most of the bikes were FZ09s.
There was about, 15 bikes total?
Maybe. Yeah. So we walked around eight and did stuff. And then we came back to do our test ride. And they have to give you a tutorial because this is where it gets interesting. They have to give you a tutorial of A, how to start the bike, because it doesn't have a starter button. It's a different kind of switch. But B, it has mode settings.
Oh, wow. So, race mode, track mode.
Well, there's the throttle is hooked up through the computer, and there's three different modes. So whenever you turn off the bike and turn it back on, it's in standard mode. So it's like a middle setting. You give the throttle 20%, it gives you 20% gasoline. And there's a mode, which is... advanced or aggressive.
Yeah.
You give it 20%, it does 30%.
Oh, wow.
And there's a retard mode where it's like C.
They called it rain mode. Like, if you really don't want to spin your tire.
Right.
So it...
And you give it 20 and it does 15 or 10% or so.
Yeah.
And I tried all three. A, of course, was the most fun.
Obviously.
Now, it's not changing how much power is available from the engine.
Right.
All it's changing is how much throttle response you're getting. Now, I can tell you from the start, and so we went on a half-hour ride through the hills out there in Carmel, Monterey.
Sweet.
And I can tell you that bike was twitchy.
It was very twitchy.
Like on the throttle response?
On the throttle, just rolling on and letting off, rolling on, letting off.
Right.
It was very jerky, and but I was very responsive. It was fun to ride, but you really had to train your right wrist.
I give the engine an A+. The motor felt amazing.
Sweet.
Especially we're talking about an $8,000 bike compared to all the other sport bikes.
Mm-hmm.
And it, so I kept playing with the different modes and seeing which one fit me. The only thing I didn't like is, and everyone got different, you got different feedback, Douglas, but I just felt that the bike, the suspension setup wasn't sharp, so that I felt there was a little bit of a delay.
Well, you got to keep in mind, though, that that's a very generic setup for everyday riders, because they're doing, 8 test rides a day or something on these things?
Well,
so it's very generalized. I'm sure it's very easy to
compared to my XS750, the setup for Street Tracker with the Arlen front end. On that bike, I can wiggle my hips, and I will get...
Yeah.
Some movement. On the FC09, I was doing that, and the bike didn't really move. It didn't really go anywhere. You had to push it a little bit more. So that was the only thing. The engine was an A+. The suspension, to me, was a little lacking.
Felt okay to me. The only thing I can really complain about is the seat. It wasn't that comfortable.
So then you were able to test ride the bike for 30 minutes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go out of the track.
A group ride, a lead group ride.
Oh.
Yeah, we left the track and went riding up. We went to a winery.
And on the way to the winery, there was a duck that had...
Ducati duck.
Right. That had hit the guardrail, probably low-sided guardrail, and somehow part of it ended up in the ground. There was a hole with gravel next to it. And it was probably half an hour, 45 minutes after the crash, because the tow truck was on the way. The cop was already there. And most of it was...
Tore
the front end completely off.
It looked horrendous. I couldn't believe the guy was standing there. It looked good.
But
and then while we were on the ride...
I went to a seminar led by Keith Code. And he gave, he talked for maybe like 25 minutes. And his, what he talked about was like the most common mistakes that people make on bikes and how to, prevent that from happening. And then he also, the main point of his whole talk was that our natural instincts are like our worst enemy on a bike. And he gave a lot of examples, and I never thought about it that way, which was really interesting. So yeah, he talked let me think. I gotta think. He talked about a lot of different stuff. He said that, like, if you see an obstacle in the road, sometimes people's natural reaction is to
stiffen
up, and that's not good. And he said, and to raise the center of gravity, which means you have less control of the bike, when really you want to kind of loosen up, stay calm. I don't know. What else did you talk about?
I get it.
What else? Target fixation.
Yeah.
And that's a natural instinct. You know, we want to see what's ahead of us. Mm-hmm. We want to see what's threatening us, but that makes us run into it.
Yeah. Well, he talks about that in Twist of the Wrist, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He had like a list.
30 years ago.
Yeah. He had like a list of 35 things that he broke down.
Any of them hit with you that you went, oh, yeah, I do that, or oh, I need to do that?
I've never had problems with target fixation. A lot of it was stuff that I had seen in Twist of the Wrist or we talked about in the MSF course. So a lot of it wasn't new. But it was interesting. You know.
I know that I've heard that when you're riding with a group, you tend to just watch the rider in front of you, mm-hmm, and follow them. And I've been told, don't do that. Because if they make a mistake, you'll make the mistake. Mm-hmm. And you have to look through them as if they are there.
What he said, which was something I'd never thought about too, is on group rides, if you're practicing lines especially and cornering, he was talking about go back from riders and watch people enter the turns, and if they're hitting their brakes a lot, that's how you know that they're taking the turn wrong, and to alternate your path of travel. Sorry, guys. There's a lot of gesturing.
What are you guys just trying to talk about? Just say it.
What's the time?
It's not like we're on TV.
What's the time on the computer? Where is it showing? I can't see it.
It's where it normally is.
Is that tiny little thing?
I know. For whatever reason, it's like,
how am I supposed to know when to stop talking?
You're not.
We'll just tell you to shut up.
Not like it works anyway.
Yeah.
It's usually big. I can't see it.
I don't know why it's small today.
But anyways, I thought that tip was kind of interesting because I'd never thought about that before. And yeah, that was.
I'm glad you got to see that. That was probably really good to watch.
And then I went and watched the Stunning that was done by BMW.
Heck yeah, Stunnings.
And this one guy, he got on F800 with ginormous luggage racks on the back, and was doing stoppies and wheelies. And at one point, he did a wheelie, and the luggage racks like dragged along the ground and made this awful noise. And burnouts. And then he got on some sport bike. I don't know what it was. It was some sport bike, and he did it all over again, plus more. He had this chicken in the middle of it, and he did a stoppie up to her, and she kissed his helmet. And then he kind of, like, wheelied in a circle around her, and she put her hand up.
She was doing a burnout. Her.
Yeah, it was. I got videos of it all. It was pretty cool. Yeah, it was quite interesting.
This was when you were talking to the dude about the FC09.
Oh, right.
So,
right.
Yeah, that was fun to watch. But yeah, they were definitely were selling the BMWs on the whole. They had these whole spiels.
Well, you don't think of BMWs as stunt bikes. They're old rich guy bikes.
Mm-hmm. So.
Or just rich guy bikes.
Well, and Zoe, while we were there, we also came to some sort of an agreement. We had a good idea that Megan will be our.
Oh yeah.
She will be our new umbrella girl.
Nice.
We gotta come. If we get her the recycle,
you just have to get me the outfit and I will put it on.
Because when you go to the races, do you know what umbrella girl?
Oh yeah, totally.
They're I said that most of them were like 20 footers, and then you get up real close and they look kind of like drag queens, and they're like spray on just tan is running and just, oh, not so pretty. So I thought we can like show them all and have Megan walking with us.
She's
with
like an 18 footer.
Thanks, honey. Love you too. Wow.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. So I think that's a brilliant idea. And so at any of our events,
technically, I'm going to be the recycle chariot racing, because it Doug was saying that the race has to be involved.
Yeah, you need to have a race.
You have to have a race.
Don't ask why, but I do kind of have a cheerleader outfit in my house. Maybe we can use.
For some reason, I won't dress up as a cheerleader. I'm not going to dress up as a cheerleader.
No, Matt, I think we can use
recycled cheerleader.
At least the skirt. Yeah, don't ask why.
I still have all that.
Just know it's next to my little Bo Peep outfit.
Doug still has all the drag queen stuff he wore to the Pride Parade.
Right. And what lesson did you learn on that day?
Make sure your Trail 70 is tuned.
When you're on the parade. When you're wearing a mini skirt.
I don't know.
Trail 70s and miniskirts are not.
Mini skirt kept flying up.
Yeah, that's right.
And then you were running out of gas. And then you were running out of gas, and you were like, don't die on me. That means I have to kick this in a miniskirt.
You had plenty of gas. It was just not tuned right.
You got back to the garage, and it was out of gas. I think.
So I had to keep it, going in the parade. Because it was going to die if it didn't.
So, yeah, it was a good time, and then it ended, we rode home, and it was uneventful, but the weather was just perfect. It was a good event. It was less crowded than the MotoGP. Nice. It was less attended,
a good amount of people, but not so shoulder to shoulder, MotoGP is. And it's fun. It's all really exciting, but it was a nice break to have so few people there. Mm-hmm. I couldn't find any gloves. There was not one place selling street gloves. They had like touring gloves and deerskin gloves and all the high end
hoity-toity
shit. I just wanted some.
If anyone from Motorcycle Superstore is listening, please come back to the races.
Mm-hmm.
We want to buy stuff.
From you.
Yes, exactly. So I think this is a good time to segue into
me.
Zoe, get to know Zoe!
Oh,
hello! Zoe, you're so shy.
I am a little bit shy, yeah.
So. Zoe, I've got some questions to ask you.
Liza, I may have some answers.
I hope so. So Zoe, how long have you been writing, and how did you get into writing?
Well, I've been writing for almost 2 years now. I got into writing when I was very young, before I even had a motorcycle or access to a motorcycle. I was really taken by motorcycles and the freedom, the whole ideal behind them. Also at night, I would imagine that I was on a motorcycle going down a highway, and it helped me fall asleep. So it was a really nice,
Had you ridden on a motorcycle as
no.
a kid?
Never. I've been on ATVs.
Even on the back?
No. Okay. Never. First time I was on the back of a motorcycle was when you took me on the XL175 for a quick jaunt down the street.
No, that was my bike that you.
The CM400, right?
That was my bike.
I could see how you can confuse the two.
Yeah,
they're both Hondas.
Yeah, that's about all they have in common.
Yeah, so I didn't really ride motorcycles when I was younger, but the idea was always there. My uncle used to ride. It just seemed to be in the family a bit. So, yeah, when I turned 20, I finally started looking into the option of getting a motorcycle. I started doing, like, serious research on what everything is involved, from licensing to what's a good starter bike, what would fit me well. And
so you started on the MSF class?
I got my bike first. I got the permit, and I got my bike first, and then I took the MSF class because, like, I need back up.
What bike did they put you on in the class?
It was... shit.
When I took the class, they had...
It was...
like little 125.
Yeah, it was just like a little 125. It was just
a street, rebel. A cruiser.
It was a little street bike, but nothing really big. For me, it was super small. I mean, yeah, I just like crushed the poor little thing. But it was a good learning experience. And then I kind of got a little more confident on my own bike, and... yeah, I don't know. The rest has kind of been history.
So what bikes have you owned?
My first bike was 92 Honda Shadow. Love that bike. Still do. I sold that and recently purchased the CVR 600. Mm-hmm. I went from a cruiser to a sport bike. Like complete 180 of what I've been riding.
So how did your riding style change?
Much more aggressive now. I equate it to the surfers that live in Santa Cruz. You know, I used to be a longboarder. Now I'm on a shortboard, and I'm kind of like...
Wait, you surfed?
No. Oh, but I live on Westcliff. Okay. I go check the surfers out all the time. I mean, hot guys and girls in wetsuits. Come on now. So I feel like I'm taking the road more aggressively. I'm actually... I don't know, today was the first day I actually got into a real lean. Because with this bike, my center of gravity is so far up, I've been kind of afraid to actually push it over more in a corner and take it at speed. So I've been kind of timid.
So tell us about your ride today.
Great. Life-changing. I don't know. I haven't taken the CBR on a good ride since I've gotten it. And Folsom was happening up today. And I was like, well, I'm going to go to San Francisco because it sounds fun. And I really need to get a good ride in.
Folsom is a street fair.
A street fair, yes. A very kinky street fair. It's probably the only thing gayer than a gay pride parade. But yeah, so I was like, okay, 10 a.m. I had a couple of people that were interested in going with me, but that didn't pan out. So I started heading up, and I was like, well, it's north. Pretty much any way I go, I'm going to get there. So I headed up 9, and...
9?
Well, I actually took Granham Hill over, and...
So you went the long way.
I went the long... It was more about the trip versus right. Folsom.
How long did it take you to get up there?
Hour 40? Okay. I think I took one small 10-minute break. That was just to eat some chips, get some fluids in me, and get back on the road. It was an awesome ride. I mean, I think I passed more cars than I can count. I took turns at speed. That speed's faster than I think I've ever taken turns. I think I took the bike faster than I've taken it in the past.
And it was comfortable?
Yeah, it was super comfortable. Comfortable enough that I even found a spot between 3,000 and 4,000 RPM that if I sit just right, it's better than the best vibrator I have. Like, oosh. So Starbuck is now my sex machine. And the great thing is the RPM range is perfect around town, so it makes the little jaunts even more exciting.
Good job.
Is that really getting it as well?
Well, I was on my way to a kinky festival. I mean...
Did you wear your chaps?
No, but I had some gear with me.
I have some if you ever want to borrow them.
I don't. I'll stick to it.
First time I saw assless chaps was at Folsom Street Fair.
Yeah, mine was at a leather bar. That was fun. Guy was actually dressed up as a biker, but assless chaps. Great.
Yeah, I was a teenager. It was like, okay. All right. So how would you say biking has changed your life?
Well, in many ways. For me, it's been a very almost spiritual, soul-fulfilling thing. It's a very anxious person, and I don't know, I think I found a way for motorcycles to kind of be a way for me to curb my anxiety. Because before I, like, walk around places, I didn't have my own transportation, so it was always nice to be able to hop on my motorcycle and just go wherever I need to go, or just get away from anything that was giving me anxiety. So it played a good role in recovery on that.
How has the recycled garage changed your life?
Very much the same way. Well, I don't do well in groups, and it's a group environment.
Hey, newsflash, this is a group.
I know.
Every weekend here.
Totally, and that's why it's been good for me. It's gotten me out into groups on a regular basis. So yeah, it's been a good experience. Motorcycles in general, wrenching.
We'll find a way to ruin that.
I'm sure you will.
There's a way. Liza will
all you have
it.
To do is like, you know, hey, Zoe, we know you can't ride, so we're all going to go take off on a group ride. And I'm just going to... Seriously, there's going to be so many heartbreaks the next few months. So many great group rides I'm going to miss.
So, you've ridden a bunch of bikes since you've been coming here. Right. What are some of your favorites?
Well, okay, my favoriteest bike is your Cafe Racer.
My Cafe Racer?
Yeah. Now, it's not necessarily because
Wait a minute, the
CB750? Yes, the CB750. It was one of the first bikes to let me ride, by the way.
Okay. Because I don't usually pull that out.
You don't, and I want to ride it more often if you let me.
Maybe.
It's got
that oil leak.
But
if you want to tear the engine apart and replace that O-ring, that's fine.
I'm gonna have some free time.
But I didn't know that was one of your favorites. That's cool.
Oh yeah. There's actually a story behind that. I had first saw it in a museum event when I was walking by it downtown. I didn't realize it was your bike, and it was the bike of all the bikes that had drawn my attention. So I had actually gone off the street to go get a closer look.
Really? Because Douglas had a bike there that didn't draw your attention?
Was Crunch there? Yeah, I think I remember Crunch there. I was like, who the hell does that to bikes? Look at those silly things. I was like, why is this next to this pretty thing?
Just so you know.
It's not meant to be pretty.
Well, I know. That's what I mean. Crunch is an awesome bike, but I mean... The Cafe is a beautiful, elegant swan. It's a pretty bite.
But what we intended at that show was to show the range of things you can do. You could just have fun and be crazy with it.
Right.
Or you could be meticulous, nice. You know.
Right.
So, good. I remember you saying that was part of how you learned about us. And then it took you a while.
Yeah, a long while. Again, the anxiety thing.
That was
thing.
A couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
To finally
No, that was just last
here.
Year.
Was no,
it was a year and a half ago.
Yeah, around there.
But I'd like to say that Zoe wouldn't have been ready for us then.
That's an apt way of putting it.
I don't think we were ready for her either.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any other favorites that you've ridden?
Trip. Trip's a fun bike.
Bumblebee.
Trip.
Bumblebee.
I refuse to call it Bumblebee in respect to Liza.
Don't worry, XS 750 triple tracker.
It's a fun bike. Like, I've ridden it, Capitola, I've ridden a couple other times too. But
what's the most intimidating bike you've ridden?
Ooh, CB, or my CBR.
Has she not ridden your Ninja?
Mm-mm.
Well then. Oh, well, let's not ruin the CBR for her.
Yeah. Well, it's only because the CBR, I mean, I haven't pushed it to its limits.
Well, I'll tell you, when I had that CBR and I put those upright bars on it,
it
makes a big difference in the riding style.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't ever like the bike with the lower
bars. And it's really nice. I mean, I didn't have any problems keeping my weight off my arms. It had me in a good seating position to where I didn't have to hunch myself forward. Right. So it was pretty comfortable sitting on it for like 3 hours today.
Yeah.
The only thing that I think hurt was the fact that my arms had continued vibrating, that after 3 hours, I couldn't lift my arms really that much, and I couldn't feel my hands.
Well, because, yeah, you need to keep doing longer and longer rides, because I want to get a group to do an iron butt. Or a mini little version of it, but
well, my
do some extreme riding.
Comfortable on that bike. Something I've been trying to do is Adrian. One of the vampires told me instead of pushing on the handlebars, steer pull,
mm-hmm.
and it works a complete different set of muscles. And it's such a difference. It is such a difference because it keeps you more balanced on your core, and it takes the stress off of your shoulders. And also teaches you that the steering, that the handlebars are just to move the actual wheel. The steering is all in your motion on the bike. So it was a good day.
So, final question. What is your the butt bike?
I have two. One of them is semi-obtainable, but I can't have it. And the other one, I don't know if I can obtain it.
Okay.
And I probably would take it up the butt in front of a group full of people. I am really raging mad at you for it, too.
One of these days, we're going to have to arrange this.
If you did, I'd probably take it up the butt for a Triton.
Oh, right.
That's my new up-the-butt bike is a Triton.
Because I took her to Raber's.
Oh, that place was awesome. In the back of the shop, there was this awesome Triton with a metal, pure metal tank.
Is that a Manx tank?
Yeah.
Oh, it was just so nice. Like, closest thing I could think of perfection in a motorcycle.
Motorcycle porn.
It was total motorcycle porn. And I mean, it's a really neat looking bike. It's really cool. It's got actual some speed. It's not, you know, a little slow bike. I mean, they built those things to be fast. That was the idea. Let's take the engine of something that's really awesome. Let's take the frame of something that's really awesome. Combine these two concepts.
Right.
And then you have the Triton. So yeah, I take it out the butt for Triton.
And what was the other one?
Super Duke 1290.
Oh, come on!
160 horsepower, baby! I know. That's why I picked two, because I know...
Wait, is that the one that... Super which Duke. One is the one that's not attainable, and which is the one that might be obtainable?
The one that's not attainable, I think, is the Triton for me, because I think that's going to be more expensive and a little harder to find than a Super Duke 1290.
Well, it's very hard to find a Super Duke 1290
right now. Because they're not out. Right, so exactly. They're both kind of on the edge of being unobtainable, but I don't know, I was watching the Super Duke 1290 on some tracks, and oh my god, that thing just blows everything else out of the water.
It does look pretty sexy.
I know. I don't know if that's my...
I would have a three-way with the Norton, Triton, I mean, the Triton and the Super Duke, like...
I'm going to have to take the Super Duke 1290 off of my up the butt list, because it might be my go-into-debt list.
Right.
Yeah. I might... I don't know what it's going to go
for. Are these not available for retail
No,
yet?
It's still just a...
Still a concept or what?
Well, it's coming.
It's coming. It's definitely going to be something.
Do you see how many people it kills first before they...
So, any parting things you want to share about getting to know Zoe?
I have awesome blue hair.
Yes, you do.
One of my favorite moments on motorcycle happened the other day and made me remember why I kind of liked motorcycles to begin with.
No, you already told us about the vibrations.
No, I know. This is a little better.
It's just a perk. The vibration's just a perk.
That is
motorcycles.
A big perk. The other day I was coming back into town after a good ride and I was passing by the school. And these, I'd say middle schoolers, maybe high schoolers, are walking down the street, like a giant group, about 20 of them. And I'm stuck at a stoplight, and they're walking by, and one of them shouts, "Nice bike! Oh, and awesome hair!" It's like, "Oh, thanks!" I go and I blip the throttle twice. Group of sharing kids! It's like, yeah, that's my inner child. That's why I got the motorcycle. I wanted this thing for years, and now I just had the fun of going out on it and coming back into town, yeah.
Cool. Well, thanks. That's our get to know Zoe, and now we'll just keep on talking. But to carry on about the kids, I feel a responsibility as a biker when I'm on a bike and a little kid is looking at you. I wave.
Always wave.
I've done that a few times.
I feel like I gotta plant the seed. This might be a little biker.
Yeah.
Like the kid with the puppy today on the way back.
Oh my gosh.
There was this puppy in an SUV right to the left of us in the next
in the front
lane.
Seat and this little kid
and the
was
puppy
holding.
Was like running up to the window and then see my bike and kind of scoot back.
Yeah.
I run up and see the bike and scoot back. And
it was really cute.
That was pretty dang cute. It was small puppy. And yeah. The kid was small too, but
no, I love waving to kids. That's one of my favorite things about riding around town. So there's so many kids walking around mm-hmm. and in cars, and I always wave to them if they're looking at me. And then they see I'm a girl. Then they
really get like, oh my god!
Yeah.
Then well, I just remember just, when I was a kid how obsessed I was. And you know, looking at bikes. I remember rolling down the window going, nice hog to tie on a Harley. And I turned to my friends, Harleys are called hogs, you know.
So the seed was planted.
Oh, right. Well, you want to know, I was obsessed as a small child. I remember when I was 5 or 6, the neighbor boy had a little dirt bike. He'd ride around the neighborhood. And I so wanted to ride that bike. And I talked him into letting me ride it in the parking lot near our house, which had a slight downhill to it. So he wouldn't turn the bike on. All he did is let me sit on it, and he would run alongside and let me just because it's gravity, just going downhill.
Just coast, yeah.
Yeah, just coasting down this slight hill, and he'd run alongside. And I kept going, I can do it, let go! I can do it, let go! So I wanted to ride. And then this other kid I knew when I was like maybe 7 or 8, his brother had a bike that he had taken the engine out of. If I had to guess, it was like an old Honda or Suzuki or something. And he and I, so we had this bike that had no tank and no engine. It was just a seat, a rolling chassis with a seat and working brakes. And he and I would push it up this hill in our neighborhood just to coast down the hill on it to feel like we were riding. Like, that was like... so much fun. It was the coolest thing. And we would get to the bottom hill and we would push that thing back up and then just take turns coasting.
Sometimes there's a hill, I'll go down, I'll pull in the clutch and pretend I'm that kid again. Like, you know, just like, oh, I'm on a bike going down a hill, pretending I'm on a motorcycle.
But for me, what locked it in was on my 10th birthday when we were actually moving cross country. And on my 10th birthday, we were having our going away party. And we were getting in the van and leaving. And one of my dad's friends showed up on a CB750. And I talked him into giving me a ride around the neighborhood.
Nice.
On the back. And what's funny is I was so young back then, but I still remember every bike I rode on the back of as a little kid. Like, I knew exactly what they were. And in some cases, I didn't know what they were until I was older and I saw one and recognized what it was. Like, I didn't realize until I was much older that when I was 12, the first person who taught me how to ride a bike was a Suzuki GS650. I didn't realize that till after. But, oh, yeah. As a kid, I was obsessed. So, yes, I was.
So what are your obsessions, Liza?
Possums.
Possums,
butt cracks, and dressing people
Broadway up. Musicals. Yes, I put them all together.
I think one of my earliest memories of motorcycle was, I think it was like 4th grade, and it was, you know, bring your parent to school day, and they'd talk about their profession. Anyway, this is the only one I remember, was my friend's dad was a motorcycle racer, and he brought his bike and showed us the bike. And then he took off doing this mean wheelie. And ever since then, I was like, that was the coolest freaking thing. And I think that's not really what planted the seed, but made me aware.
All the rest of those parents felt so inadequate.
Yeah. Yeah, it was the coolest thing when you're that small.
Do you have, Megan, do you have any bike stories from when you were a little kid? Impressions made on you?
Well, my first memory of knowing anything about motorcycles was finding out how my grandfather died. I asked one day, you know, how did my Papa Nicholas die? And I was told, Highway 17, he went right off the edge of the cliff. Grew up in Santa Cruz. He was an old HA guy and, yeah, went off the edge of 17 and died like a day later. So that was one of my earliest, like, oh, he died on one of those things. And then I'd see those around town and be like, oh, that's what my grandfather died on. So that's kind of dark and dreary, but yeah, that
and
was.
And that got you into riding motorcycles.
I don't know. That was the first time I ever took notice of motorcycles.
She's just a vampire groupie, that's all.
Yeah, whatever. You wish.
I'm sleeping on the couch tonight.
You wish.
Oh, so Douglas, you mentioned that you had a funny story.
Oh, yeah. It was like the first week I got Zeus, the Ninja ZX7. And, of course, I'm on it every minute I'm not at work. I'm on this freaking thing because it's so much fun. My first, you know, big boy bike. And I get out to 17 and I'm going downhill towards Ocean Street and bike dies out of gas. I'm like, what the fuck do I do? I'm still learning the petcock and everything. And I put it on reserve. And because it's facing downhill, it's not working.
Right.
Would not start. So I had to walk it out into the lane and back it up facing the wrong way uphill just to let the float bowls or the bowls fill up again so I could get a quarter mile down the highway. Maybe half mile down the highway to the...
That'd be a heavy bike to push, too.
I had not realized what was going on, because it wasn't starting even in reserve. And I was there for like half an hour. And I had already called for a ride and for someone to, you know, help me push the bike down the highway. Until I all of a sudden realized, maybe I've turned it around. The reserve will work. So that's me.
I've got one
incident with this thing.
Better. On the shadow, I just got done cleaning the carbs on the bike, and I put the tank back on. It's out taking it for a test ride, and I'm going down West Cliff, and all of a sudden, gasoline starts dripping down the side of the motorcycle. Just, you know, a little bit. It's like, okay, that's not good. And then all of a sudden, water flow. Like, it just seems like a waterfall going down the side of the motorcycle. At this point in time, I'm gushing gas. There's a stream of it coming out of the motorcycle. I don't know what the hell is going on. I mean, before that, the bike was running great. So I'm down by the lighthouse. I pull over into one of the parking spaces next to this dude who's kind of like taking a nap in his car. And I'm just sitting there frantically trying to figure out what the hell is going on. At this point in time, my mechanical knowledge goes so far under the ability of changing, like, cleaning your carbs. Like, I should not have been doing that at that point in time.
So since the bike was still running, it means that the float was stuck and it was coming out the overflow?
No, the petcock was loose and came off of the bike. So it was coming out of the tank.
I've never had a petcock come loose.
Because this one only screws in. It was weird. It was just, and so it came unscrewed out from the vibrations and...
Back to those vibrations again, Zoe.
Yeah. But the shadow never had the right ones. Only bad vibrations.
Your seat was too soft. The vibrations were there.
Yeah.
If you're on my bike and you like 8 or 9,000 RPMs and you kind of like lean forward and take your feet off the pegs, it's perfect.
Any bike at 8 or 9,000 RPM.
But
the Gooch, 3,500 RPM with the metal seat.
I don't want that bolt up my butt.
Where were we?
So I don't know if I ever told you guys my RT1100 breakdown story, but you'll enjoy it. I had just bought second BMW. I'd had the K75 RT. Then on a whim, I was at a motorcycle show and they had some used bikes. And I just thought, oh, R1100 RT. I would like to do some touring. And so I bought it. I think it was like $8,000. Bought it from a dealer and decided to take it on a trip. This is when I lived in Atlanta. So I decided I was going to go down to Florida.
Okay.
To the Panhandle where a friend of mine was living and just go tour around Florida for a couple days. So I got down to the Panhandle and met up with her, and then I was going to head south. And when you're this part of Florida, like, it was almost like bayous, right? I was just on this nice highway. Nobody's around. just, you're just, there's nothing there, right? It's just swamps and forest, pine forest. And I'm cruising along, and I started to see some smoke coming from the bike. And I looked down, and I saw some oil dripping out.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, oh, no, I must have, like, blown a gasket or something, right? Mm-hmm. And I realized, though, like, I was in the middle of nowhere. There's nothing around. So I thought, oh.
Not a fun situation.
Oh, I better not keep going down this road. I know there is a town about 10 miles back or so. I better turn around and try and get out of here.
I saw a really horrendous picture of a motorcycle. Sorry.
What?
A really horrendous picture of a motorcycle on Facebook. That's all.
Okay. So I'm like, well, I just assume because on the RT, it's fully, it's full fairing, so you can't see the engine, so you can't assess.
Right.
But I just went, okay, I need to try and get closer to civilization. There was no phone signal, nothing out there. So I do a U-turn, and I decide, well, I'm going to put it into like fourth gear, but drive about 20 miles an hour so I can get the engine moving as slow as possible, and just try and limp my way back to civilization, because I just assume it's just under pressure squirting out. Well, I look down and it's just like your gas, it's just glug 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 glug, just pouring out. And then as soon as the red light, oil light came on, turn the bike off and just shut it down. So now I'm just on the side of this highway, and there's just oil everywhere. I have no idea what happened.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, no phone reception. What do I do? I just hung out there until a car came by, and I hitchhiked. And they took me up the road to an oyster bar, which was the first place of business. So they have these things called oyster bars. It's like a little general store, but you go in and all they sell are like beer and oysters.
Okay.
And they just shuck oysters live for you and just put them out on the oyster bar.
And cold beer.
And cold beer. Yeah. And from there, they called a tow truck for me. So
did you partake in oysters and beer?
Oh, of course. Well, not the beer. Yeah, but I did have oysters. Love oysters. I mean, you're right there near the water, so they're going and harvesting them and bringing them up in bushels. It's so right. Awesome. So then cool. This flatbed truck pulls up, and I say, okay, how are we going to secure it? And he goes, well, don't you have straps? No, don't you have straps? He goes, nope, but I'll take you into town. You can go to the hardware store and buy some. Can you imagine? So he takes me into town. I had to go buy straps to put my strap on his tow truck, which I'm paying for. Right. It was AAA, you know. We go back, get the bike, tow it into town where I park it in a parking lot. Then I figured, well, now I need to go back to Atlanta to go get my truck and trailer. So I call my friend who's working in this town. This is in Port St. Joe. She finds some guy she knows from the restaurant she works at who's willing to give me a ride to Panama City, like a half hour away, which is the closest place to rent a car. These are all small little towns, right?
Right.
This guy, okay, first of all, you have to know, for me to get into his pickup truck with him, one of those little pickup trucks, he first had to clear all of the soda pop and beer cans out of the passenger seat.
Nice!
You see these shows about the hoarders?
Right.
He was a hoarder in the car. And like milk jugs and everything. The back was full of stuff. The passenger seat was full of stuff.
He was like, hey.
And here, I've got my two Snap-on luggage that I've taken off of the bike. Right. My helmet, all my gear. Nothing can go into the back because it's full of cans. Turns out this guy was walking down the highway collecting cans one day, and a truck came by, and the truck's a mirror clipped him in the back of the head, and he has a head injury now. He doesn't talk real well. He's functional, but he's also not capable of a lot of things.
Probably got a huge settlement, too.
Yeah, got a huge settlement. Now he just continues to collect cans and keeps them in his car. I don't know.
It's like a bad horror story of like,
so I'm like driving in this car with this very odd man.
Right.
Who took me to Panama City, where I then rented a car, and then I had to drive it's like 5 hours back to Atlanta.
Oh, gosh.
To get my truck and trailer, to then drive 5 hours back down to pick up the bike. So now I have to get the bike into the trailer by myself. I couldn't push it up. It's a big bike. So I figured, well, there has to still be a little bit of oil in the engine, right?
Drive it 10 feet? Sure.
Right? So I start the bike up just to drive it up onto the trailer, load it up, take it back to the dealership I bought it from, and they call me and they say, okay, well, your engine is ruined. I said, what? I said, yeah, your oil sight glass popped out of the engine. So basically, I had a half-dollar size hole in the engine.
That's manufactured defect. And all the oil just go. That's complete manufactured defect.
He said that it was me starting the bike to put it onto the trailer that killed it. Because I turned that engine off as soon as the oil light came on. They say that it's too late then. But, I mean, and I was running the engine slow. So, and unfortunately, BMW does not acknowledge that as a factory defect, that the previous owner maybe overheated the engine and it weakened the seals, and I had to buy a brand new engine, $5,000. So I ended up paying full price. Like, I could have bought a brand new showroom bike for what I paid for that bike. It was a bit of a heartbreak, but yeah. I did get it fixed, and I did travel on that bike, and it was a good bike after that. But I still just remember, like, all these people along the way, and to me, those are the kind of adventures, not that I wish I'm gonna break down or hope I break down, but I don't mind it, because you meet these characters, like all the guys in the oyster bar and this weird can collector with a head injury.
Which is great, except if you have anxiety about people.
Well,
like, that's like my biggest fear is, like, oh great, now I've got to rely on people I don't know.
Ugh. So, Zoe, we were talking earlier, and you mentioned you had has anyone had a breakdown in a bad spot? Was that?
My worst one in a bad spot was, at a stoplight, my clutch cable came undone. So I ended up...
Okay, wait a minute. Clutch cable came undone. How does your clutch cable come undone?
I had just made an adjustment the previous day, and obviously it did not hold. So the clutch cable came undone, and the bike was stuck in gear. Like, it wouldn't shift out of gear, and then it shut off, so I couldn't start the bike because it was in gear. And pulling in, because I didn't have clutch. So here I am, I can't get the bike to do anything besides push it in gear out of the way. And I'm in this intersection with people behind me and then people on either side of me. Like, I can't necessarily just push it out of the way. I've got to wait for everybody to clear out from behind me to get out of the way. So, it wasn't a big deal because I was able to get it finally off to the side of the road and just my hands, you know, reattach it, but it was very inconvenient. I was, like, actually just taking it for a test ride up into the hills, and right as I was just about on the end of Ocean, that's when it happened.
That's something I find newer riders all the time. If you stall the bike, pop the clutch or something in traffic, people panic. And I always tell, I remember, like, when you were riding Little Red, that doesn't have a starter, like, if you pop the clutch, mm-hmm. you're gonna have to kickstart it. All you have to do is just first thing, get out of the road and then worry about starting it. Just happened to me, actually. I was on Little Red the day before yesterday, and I split lanes up to the stoplight right up here on 1 at Mission, and popped the clutch, stalled the bike. Now, I'm in the middle, so both cars on both sides of me are like, what do we do? And I know I couldn't kickstart right there, so I just put out my hands, told everyone, hold on a second.
This bike, you actually have to put on the center stand and stand on it. It's not a small, it's an event to get this thing.
Yeah. So I realize this is what I tell people all the time is relax, get to a safe spot, right, and then worry about it. Because people get panicked.
Totally.
So, yeah, take your time. If you have to take the bike and wave cars around you or whatever, but don't feel pressured, because that's
And you make mistakes when you feel pressured.
Well, exactly. For me, it was funny because the bike didn't want me to push it.
You're under this tension of like, and you're not thinking clearly.
You don't think clearly, and everything seems like it's worse than it is because that adrenaline's pumping, and
So the first thing you do is you have to relax, control the environment, and get to a safe spot.
Right.
So I broke down, ran out of gas. I borrowed my roommate's bike when I was younger on the Bay Bridge going to San Francisco. On the Bay Bridge going to San Francisco. And, hold on. Josie the cat is knocking things over.
Hey, Josie.
She's next to your brake pads.
Yeah.
Go on.
Bay Bridge is not a place you want to run out of gas because there's no breakdown lane.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you end up pushing your bike off
the
bike?
No, there's nowhere to go. You have to get off the bike and hug the edge, the guardrail, the edge of the bridge, and wait for... They're pretty good. I think they have cameras on there. I'm not sure. Because pretty soon one of those big trucks came up with flashers and a can of gas. And he gave me gas and no charge. You just have to sign this thing and get out of there. It's like, whoa, that was pretty cool. But you talk about freak out running out of gas on a 5-lane bridge with no breakdown lane.
First time I took CBR on the freeway, I actually ran out of gas. And
you've run out of gas a couple of times on that thing, haven't
three
you?
Three times now. Although that time I was able to kick it into the reserve without even pulling over onto the side. And I was okay. Yeah, and then the third time I ended up running out of gas was at home. Like, I just finished riding. And as I pull into the driveway, the bike dies.
That happened to us the other... And then after the dark ride.
Mm-hmm.
And then the first one when I was just getting gas for the first time.
And I raced you.
You raced me, and I was only like 50 feet away from the gas station. So.
Now, Douglas, you said you've never broken down. I want to call bullshit.
When I actually think about it, there was a couple times. No, it was because it was with Crunch before it was not charging. There was frayed wire. And so it'd ride most of the day. And then all of a sudden, there's just nothing, not enough to start the bike, because it would, up, and it would start, give it a few starts throughout the day, and then all of a sudden, nothing. But it was just a frayed wire, but, the bump start will fix that.
Because Donut broke down this week, and I haven't gotten the full story, but he did mention that it's a great community of bikers. And that's something I just wanted to point out, is that... because Zoe, and Megan, all of y'all in the last few years have started riding, and you're all discovering this motorcycle community.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, not just here at the garage, but, we talked about how you wave at each other. And if you break down...
People stop. Yeah.
Bikers will, even if they're in their cage, they'll stop.
Yeah.
And...
I've pulled over a couple times just because I felt someone calling me, just to say, hey, I'll call you back, my mom or someone. I'll call you back in 10 minutes. And I've had bikers pull over. You okay? Do you need a hand? But, it's like, I'm just making a phone call. It's fine.
So I'm waiting to get the story on how he was helped. But that is something that is really cool. That is an added bonus that you don't realize comes with it when you get a bike.
Is his Ninja here?
No, it got taken home.
Okay.
I know that when I was part of the BMW Motorcycle Owners Association, you get this book.
Part of your fancy BMW Owners Association.
Yes. I got a little patch. And you get a book of all across the country, people who have offered to put their name in this book that you carry with you, that if you're touring and you break down, you look up by state and by city, and they're available to call for help.
That's cool.
Or if you need a couch to crash on, or a wrench to borrow.
So for BMW owners to be hobschnob with each other.
You know, Barf actually has something like that, too. If you go onto the Barf website, that's the Bay Area Writers Forum, they have a whole forum. They have a whole part of the forum where it's like, I've broken down and I need help. And if you go up there and post, hey, I'm at this place, generally a moderator, I've seen, they have past ones, a moderator finds someone that's in the area and will call them to help you out. I've seen a couple of incidents on there where random people on an online forum.
We should just give a general shout out to Barf. That's a really good resource.
You know, the writers, wherever you are in the Bay Area, will help you out if you've broken down.
Anywhere you go, anywhere I've lived, anywhere I've ridden, when I've ridden cross country, I've hooked up with people, we've ridden with each other, helped each other out. If you have had a story you would like to share about your experience with the community, then please email us at recyclemotorcyclegarage@gmail.com and share it with us. I'd love to hear, you know, how you've helped somebody or been helped. Also, I'd like to remind everyone, please visit our website, motorcyclesandmisfits.com, where Zoe has created the website and is constantly going to be improving adding and updating.
Yeah, we just got a calendar up there right now. We're adding events that are going on the Bay Area.
I'll give you the list.
And a couple links, too,
we got links to Vampires, Jim's Cycle, and Wayne over at Cycle Revolution.
People who help us out. So, love to hear from you. What stories you have, what stories you'd like to hear. And I think that's it. This is Motorcycles and Misfits, the podcast. This is Liza. We got Douglas.
Yay.
He's falling asleep.
Yeah.
Zoe.
Hey.
And Megan.
Hey. And Josie the kitty.
Cool.